Federal law requires hospitals to post the prices of medical and surgical procedures on their websites in the hope that healthcare consumers will be able to make informed decisions about which providers to go to. The intention was always to allow market forces to reduce the cost of healthcare and to empower patients and their families to make better decisions. But it hasn't really worked out that way. Many factors influence the final cost of what's called an episode of care, including the terms of health insurance policies, government programs such as Medicare and Medicaid, and providers' need to cover the cost of uncompensated care. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Dan Bomas. Utah Foundation has been studying these issues and recently published a report, X-Raying Healthcare, a look at price transparency for Utahns. On this edition of Utah Thrives, we'll talk to Josh Wright, the author of that report, along with two leaders in Utah healthcare, Matt Sloniker with the Utah Health Policy Project, and Scott Barlow, the CEO of Revere Health. Josh Wright worked with the Utah Foundation as an intern, but plans now to attend medical school. He says there may be different ways of looking at cost data that will give patients and policymakers a better view of the actual cost of that care.
Maybe first we can go layer by layer, and we'll start with the consumer, right? So we'll, or as I like to say, the patient, right? Because right now healthcare, many patients are expected to be consumers. And a lot of the language regarding consumers in terms of shopping is applied to them. But let's take a patient and then let's give them perfect healthcare pricing information, which is obviously something they don't have now. Would they even in that instance be able to use it? And one highlight of the report is that a small percentage of Americans are healthcare literate. And so I think one of the big structural issues that won't go away with better access to information is the fact that many people who consume healthcare, who are patients in our healthcare system, don't understand what's happening to them. It's incredibly complicated, procedures are incredibly complicated, and as a result, pricing information is incredibly complicated.
Well, and nobody goes shopping for an emergency appendectomy.
That's true, yeah. That's a big part of the research, is that many people have tried to classify how much of healthcare is shoppable in the healthcare system. And they estimate that only around 40% of healthcare is shoppable. So that would be something that's not an emergency appendectomy. It's not anything that you have to go immediately. It's things that you can schedule out in advance.
Isn't that the situation most people are in, is that they have no idea how much something is going to cost until they're already obligated to pay for it?
That's exactly the situation that most people are in. And it reflects the multiple payers and layers of complexity in the system. It's not like many people have insurance. Most people have insurance. And so it's the interaction between the provider, the insurance. The provider and the insurance undergo negotiations to figure out what the end rate would be. And then there's also your plan structure that's different for every person. You may have a high deductible plan, you may have a high out-of-pocket plan. And so it all depends on your plan structure and what the insurance and the provider are agreeing upon.
But those explanations of benefits themselves are a source of information that people can look at, right?
They are. And so in their current form, they come after the procedure. They'll explain what the provider and the insurance company agreed upon. What we talk about in the report and what we've kind of decided as a very promising policy is to require providers and insurers to work together before your procedure to prepare an advanced explanation of benefits. And it would have that level of detail that you see on your explanation of benefits. However, it'd be before you have to pay anything.
And have the insurance companies accepted this as an idea, or is this something that's been hard to persuade them to do?
What we've seen from the beginning of price transparency regulation is that it's an uphill battle. There's definitely been a lot of pushback from all sectors of the industry. And I think there's good faith arguments and good faith reasons why members of the healthcare community are concerned about these extra regulations. However, there's also instances in which they are trying to conceal prices that they themselves admit that they consider to be trade secrets. What we saw with insurers specifically is that they were concerned that there wasn't an infrastructure in place to have that kind of communication beforehand with the provider. And so they asked for a pause from the Center for Medicaid Services in order to get time to figure out how they're going to do that. That's the good faith argument. Whether or not this is just kicking the can down the road will have to be seen.
But after it's all over, isn't there an opportunity to look at the data for everybody's claims and how much they actually paid? That might be a more useful source of data than pricing in advance.
Yeah, that's definitely true. If I understand your question correctly, there are kind of two purposes of this pricing information. In a lot of the public messaging, people in this world focus on the consumer and the idea of a consumer being able to shop for healthcare. What's also true is that researchers, government level people, anyone, journalists, anyone who wants to get an idea of the state of healthcare as a macro, as a big system, can use this information to get much better insight than we've ever had before.
Josh Wright is the author of Utah Foundation's recent report on price transparency in healthcare. Matt Sloniker is the executive director of the Utah Health Policy Project, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization advancing sustainable healthcare solutions for underserved Utahns. He says making fair cost comparisons has been difficult with the information that's been available until now.
But the problem is, do we have that data? Can we get that data early enough for it to make a difference? And is that data fully reflective of what the cost could be? Because after all, if you have X insurance, your rate might be A. If you have Y insurance, your rate might be B. Medicare would be different. Cash pay would be different. So this sort of estimate of benefits after the fact, it changes on a case-by-case basis. You'd have to provide input into whatever algorithm or aggregated database, as you put it, to spit out the right results that are trustworthy. And by the way, we're only talking about price here. We're not talking about quality, and we're not talking about choice, meaning healthcare isn't just a static world where either you buy a Ford or a Chevy, air conditioning, no air conditioning, the limited version or the basic version. You're talking about, do I really want this knee surgery right now, or am I going to try other alternatives to address the pain I have in my lower back, or whatever it might be? It's a very custom approach here, and you're not just buying a static widget. Everybody has tastes and preferences, and those tastes and preferences change over time, further complicating the decision. So I don't have a lot of the right answers right now, but the fact that we're seeing pricing data is very, very helpful, because at least we can start somewhere, and that's important. Got to get started somewhere.
What do you think can make that data more useful now? As we accumulate it, as new regulations come in, what will make that information easier for patients to look at and perhaps make decisions on?
Well, there already are some for-profit organizations compiling the data that hospitals have been mandated to release. There's a couple apps out there where you can see the cost of delivering a baby in St. George versus West Valley versus Park City versus Salt Lake. You can search by whatever the healthcare procedure might be. It's aggregated around health procedure, CPT codes, and you can get an idea about ballpark. What that doesn't tell you is quality, and it also doesn't tell you the potential rates for your own specific insurance product if you're insured, nor does it tell you cash price if you're uninsured. So there's some limitations, but that's more than we had a few years ago, right? Just to see that from a health policy perspective, for me, just to look at a map and see that some zip codes on some medical procedures are 5, 6, 7 times as much as a zip code a few miles away, you start to think, well, why is that? And maybe we ought to look more closely at that. And I'd imagine those providers, those hospitals, are also looking at that, thinking, interesting. Why are we priced so much higher according to this widget that's reporting out the data that's being collected by CMS?
Does that trigger the market? Does that let the market start to work its magic on some of this?
So quality is a piece of it, and it's very important to make sure that as we make, you know, choices about our healthcare, that we, you know, examine quality. And, you know, I mentioned that you might see a price in St. George, but it doesn't matter how cheap it is. You may not be able to, you know, go all the way down to southern Utah to get a procedure and maybe even have to get a hotel and things. So you're talking about, you know, price data is important. Will the market react? I think it might. I don't know that we've seen that yet. Some, from my understanding, there's some questions around the accuracy of the data that's being reported. There's a question around how comprehensive it is. So some folks may see, you know, in these various widgets that are now being offered, or just, you know, through these various widgets that are now being offered, they may see price differentials, but they may not trust it. They may not act upon it. And again, going back to culture, going to back to how we were all socialized around healthcare, we're going to go to the entity that we always have gone to, and maybe price isn't even part of that. So, you know, that you know, not to get too much into that other part of the conversation, but it's vitally important to remember price is a starting point. Seeing the data is absolutely impactful, but it may be years before we actually see a marketplace that is functioning as it should. And it's going to take several other changes before we get there as well.
Matt Sloniker serves as executive director of the Utah Health Policy Project, which works to facilitate access to healthcare as well as advocating for better public policy. You're listening to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Scott Barlow is the CEO of Revere Health, based in Provo, with clinic locations across the state from Brigham City to Kanab. It's a large group practice with multiple specialties. The prices for many of its procedures are listed on its website. But Barlow says that's really only where the conversation begins about healthcare cost transparency.
The prices we have on our website that we've had there for over 15 years really represent what our charges are. But in medicine, many of us are used to, we see these really large charges, and then the insurance adjusts that down to a specific rate. So it's really not a good exactness in terms of how it's listed. And that's become part of the challenge in healthcare, is how does a consumer truly understand what things cost and what options they have so they can make decisions. And so transparency is an effort that everyone's starting to try to focus on now, to try to make it really not only charges, but really truly what it's going to cost their insurance and themselves when they have a medical service.
And the other end of that data is the explanation of benefits and what the insurance company is telling the customer that they need to pay and how much they paid to cover the procedure and what the remainder that's due from the patient is. That in individual cases may not be as helpful as it is in the aggregate.
And even in the individual, as a healthcare consumer, as well as a individual that's been involved in medicine for over 25 years, is still confusing even to me as to what really is the insight you want to get from those things. Again, it's we're in a world and in a state country that we have third-party payers, and so the terminologies and the things they use to determine actual price vary from situation to situation. So the consumer's left to really not quite know what's going to happen with the transaction until it's all over with. And even physicians who provide services for many years have not really been known for sure what things are going to cost when they order it. And now what we have in this new world is this idea of how do we help health consumers understand choices they have, options for those choices, and what the relative costs are, because we see in many cases 200% and 300% cost differentials for the exact same service within a community. And that's just never been clear to people. And now as we continue to see transparency move forward, consumers are starting to be able to really see some insight of choices they can make that results in a good health outcome at a much lower price that their employer is paying through premium, but also that they're paying through out-of-pocket costs. And that's the whole idea of this transparency, is the consumers to have better information.
But Josh, who is the author of this report, was telling us that the aggregate data of some of these explanation of benefits documents can be as useful or as helpful as anything that's published up front.
Yeah, I think we've got a long ways to go still to try to get it to the point of a transactional piece of information that's useful to the consumer. The aggregate is helpful to understand what the total costs are going to be, but what's missing at the aggregate level is the fact that individuals have choices specifically to their transaction. And the reality of aggregate, it's a summation of the individual. And in terms of really getting to the point where we can start impacting the costs that we're experiencing right now, we've really got to get it down to the individual level, because that does feed the aggregate. And most consumers don't feel like their choices really matter, because the aggregate, they don't feel they can impact. But the reality is they can.
And how do they do that?
So, and lots of things, as medicine's evolved, we've really focused on the hospital as the heartbeat of medicine in communities. They have a 200-year history of setting up services, usually through religious associations, to help provide support for the sick and the dying. But what's evolved over time is, since it's become the reliable point of care for everyone to know that I can go 24/7 and get help, it's a service that really consumers now tend to go to that venue because of predictability, reliability, but yet with a much higher cost difference. For example, if you get an MRI or a CT in a hospital, you can get that exact same test in an imaging center outside the hospital, and it's anywhere from 40 to 80% cheaper for that exact same test. And it's really built upon principles that in the early history of medicine, hospitals did lots of things where they couldn't cover costs. And so they've been able to be reimbursed at what we call in medicine as a site of service differential, meaning they get more for things they do. And the theory of that many years ago was a very sound theory of, because certain things are not going to be able to be covered by the cost of payment, hospitals get paid more for other things. So it's kind of a macroeconomic model that's been built. But now, as healthcare has evolved now to where it's more targeted and more surgical in terms of its approach, we've learned that a lot of those things that are providing extra compensation to help cover the things that aren't compensated well enough are no longer necessary. That as contracts have been analyzed better, we've been able to come up with better pricing mechanisms, mostly through the federal government and its pricing profiles, to the point where generally costs are covered. Some areas are more profitable than others, but the reality is now we do a lot of things in hospitals that we get better outcomes outside of the hospital and significantly lower costs. So how do we start slowly pivoting to that insight so consumers can choose not only where they're going from the standpoint of access, but also another understand the cost differences of what they're going to incur to do that?
Well, telling them they're going to pay less would be a start if you come to an offsite clinic.
That's correct. And even inside of hospitals now, as they've moved to where they have outpatient departments and other sorts of units, the whole health system's trying to pivot to this space. But for consumers, they truly don't think that their costs make a difference. Their premium is their premium. They do recognize they have out-of-pocket costs to a certain level, but generally they feel disempowered to be able to reflect the trajectory of where healthcare is going. And what we've learned is when we start getting consumers data that's meaningful and it's accurate, where I can choose between A, B, or C, they make good choices, which makes it cheaper. And frankly, there's good research that shows when they engage in the fiscal transaction, they engage in the health transaction more, which means they tend to follow the recommendations more effectively as well. So it's an area that all of healthcare knows we need to get to. And now the big question is, how do we get there in a manner that's interpretable and understandable by the consumer?
How can we make that data better?
There's a lot of federal and state regulation. As a matter of fact, even the Trump administration issued an executive order just about 3 weeks ago about this very subject matter of wanting the actual prices, not the charges that a clinic like ours charges or a hospital, the actual amount that's called the allowable rate of what's going to be paid based on your insurance contract. And the demands have been that that's available on a transaction-by-transaction basis prior to one getting services. So the first step has been a mandate to do that, and that has occurred. The next step now is trying to simplify the information in a way that a general consumer could understand, and then make it available at a point of care in advance of the services. So really, the stumbling block now is complexity and, frankly, a lot of anxiety in the healthcare community about how it's going to change patterns of shopping that may benefit some and hurt others, and that becomes difficult from the standpoint of stability of healthcare.
Here's a question from way out in left field, okay? We've been told that artificial intelligence programs are really good at processing large volumes of data of this kind. Do you see that there's an application for AI in making healthcare transparency a little easier for consumers?
There's no question that artificial intelligence is going to have world-changing impacts on healthcare in terms of how we treat and diagnose and manage. We've got 13 artificial intelligence pilots underway, some on the fiscal transaction side of healthcare, a lot of it in the care delivery itself in terms of trying to understand diseases better and treatment plans. So yes, but it's still buried in a world where insurance is, the business of healthcare is done through insurances, which are cumbersome and complicated and are rife with 40 years of archaic rules. For example, a simple one, in health insurance, many people say to me, why don't we just have it like we go to the grocery store and see what the milk is and the eggs? Well, the reality in health insurance is we have unique rules. For example, if you're going to have a surgery, maybe in your abdomen area, the payment for that service is going to be based on the perceived measurements of difficulty and risk, et cetera. But if you happen to have another area, maybe you have a hernia in that same area, so while you're under anesthesia, they fix your hernia in healthcare, that gets paid at 50% of its normal rate because you're already anesthetized, you're already intake. So we have all these weird rules about secondary and third procedures. And again, it just gets so complicated that it's hard for a lay consumer to understand it. Can AI help us sort through that? I think it can, but it seems to be more focused in the clinical space right now than in the transactional space because, again, the payment is all buried in claims. There's the basis of actuarial calculations. It's just so hardwired in the industry that changing it is very difficult, and we've got to get through the politics of it before AI can get through the solutions to it.
As you sit at your desk and you look at your computer and try to ask him intelligent questions, what questions would you like answers to that you're not getting?
As a provider or as a consumer? As a provider, what we'd like to see is full transparency of costs. So what's happened as transparencies begin to develop, and in medicine, services we render have a code number that identifies that service across platforms. So what's happened now is AI started to develop where services are becoming transparent, where entities may appear to be much more expensive than other entities. We've seen the entities respond by doing what's called bundling, where instead of showing you had this x-ray, you had this lab test, you had the surgery, now you'll see they'll bundle it all and your detail is one payment for everything. So what's happening now in the industry, again, is the anxiety of the solutions is we're starting to see the provisioning of data back to the consumer now being aggregated into what we call episodes or things like that, which is really nothing more than, again, rebundling up unbundled services to still keep it vague. So the number one thing we've got to get to is transactional code-by-code reimbursement rates, so it's known before a service is rendered, not because I'm going to have this, that you're going to put the anesthesia and the nursing and everything into one number, where, again, as a consumer, I don't know what parts of that I really have choice to impact. Therefore, the impact is less.
Well, University of Utah does that on their bills. You get one bill. It's two pages front and back. But if you want to know the details of how they arrived at that number, then you ask for a detailed bill, and you get five pages where you're no further ahead understanding than you were before.
Yeah. And again, you've hit it right on the head. We've developed such an archaic system. What we're trying to do now is make it better by putting lipstick on it versus we really need to look at fundamentally how do we package up services for that are being rendered to people in a manner that they can understand. I'm getting this done, and I know this. I can go here, here, or here, and it's going to cost me X, Y, and Z, and here's the clinical outcomes of access or availability or accuracy. because that's all data now, particularly with AI, that were really aggregated in a metadata standpoint where you can really start mining into it now. So health systems now have really been able to develop a better insight on what is the better outcome. And now we're trying to tie the fiscal components to those pieces of the puzzle where decision points reside. And until we get through that part of it, AI or anything else is not going to help us. So what really is the real pressure point that will move this needle more than anything else is the purchasers, the employers who pay the premiums, and the individuals themselves starting to demand data on points of care, because the tools to do it now exist. The complexity to get it done is significant. Hence, the health systems are less energized in doing it yet, because the consumers have not appeared to really be wanting it yet in detail.
Government is the number one payer for health care through Medicare and Medicaid and other programs, VA. How important is the government role in standardizing or understanding or leading in this area?
Absolutely critical. As much as we hate to say that we want them to run things because we see the inefficiencies, the reality is they are the biggest payer of services, number one. Number two, they're relatively immune from the pressures and markets of people who are perceive that this change is going to hurt them to resist it. We see lobbying, things like that. At the federal level, there's no one, if I'm unhappy about how they're presenting my data and it's making me look bad, I want it to be accurate. But beyond that, if it's just because I don't want to look bad, my ability to call anyone and get that help just doesn't exist. So they're somewhat immune. Now, that's good and bad, but nonetheless, they are the bully in this playground now, and they truly have been driving a lot of this activity the last 4 or 5 years to really make it get to the point it already has gotten, with a lot more work ahead still.
Can you learn anything from a single-payer system like Canada?
You can learn lots, good and bad. And so, you know, there is no perfect health solution. And frankly, healthcare really is a byproduct of our culture. Health is not only about healthcare, it's about lifestyle and choices we make and what we embrace and what we don't embrace. We can learn a lot about Canada, who has dramatically reduced the administrative burdens, and they put a lot more energy into that healthy living space and transparency of how they handle things. Now, they've also resulted in some degree of active rationing of what you can and can't get that the system will pay for. And so they've made choices as a country, as every other country has, and we can learn from all of them. What we know for sure is there's no country in the industrialized nations of the world that have a lower length of life as we have in America. And there's no country in the world that spends even close to the amount of money we spend per belly button every year. So if those two metrics aren't compelling enough to say we can and should be doing better, I don't know what is. And that's taken pieces from Canada and maybe pieces from the UK and pieces from Japan, where they have very high rates of physicals and active visits. If you look at the industrialized nations of the world, according to the World Health Organization, the average citizen in those countries is going to see their care team, and it looks differently in each country, but they're going to see their care team at least 7.4 to 9 times a year. In America, the average person is going to see their care team 3.4 times a year. So we see our doctors and treatment teams a lot less, and we spend a lot more and get a lot less out of it. So again, what are the lessons there? It really is about starting to help people embrace their journey and have information that they can embrace their journey and honor their journey, their values, their support systems, what they believe in, and helping support that, versus they come into a system that's very archaic and structured, and they have to fit themselves into that space. And it's not empowering, it's not engaging, and so they tend to engage when they need some help, versus can we do a better job of helping them have a healthy life and impact disease at the age of 25 and 30 and 35, versus we start impacting disease when they're 65 and older, when it's already part of their health journey. So we can absolutely learn from Canada, we can absolutely learn from every other country in the nation, and we have some really good things in our system as well. But it really comes down to how do we get the consumer to feel like the health system's there, embracing, helping them to understand their health journey and embracing that journey to be as good as it possibly can be. And when they own it, the health system is now a facilitator, not the responsible party. And we've learned, if nothing else, we've learned that we can't do that in America. We've got to do it differently.
Scott Barlow is the chief executive of Revere Health, a large multi-specialty medical practice based in Provo. He also serves on the Utah Foundation Board of Directors. Our thanks also to Matt Sloniker from the Utah Health Policy Project and to Josh Wright, the author of the report, X-Raying Healthcare, a look at price transparency for Utahns. The full report is available on the Utah Foundation website at utahfoundation.org. Utah Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research organization. Our mission is to inform and engage Utahns with illuminating, independent, nonpartisan public policy research. Thanks again for listening to Utah Thrives. I'm Dan Bomas.